this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to Y'allitics. We are excited. We've been planning this episode for a long time.
It has been on the calendar probably for longer than any episode we've had.
We have Congresswoman Julie Johnson with us. She represents District 32 in Texas. And we've talked about this for a long time for a number of reasons. We are at the White Rock Ale House in Lakewood, Texas, the very south end of White Rock Lake. And we came here because you know the place, but even more than that, you helped brew a beer here.
I did.
Tell me about the beer, because the name, you can certainly say it on the podcast.
What was that called again?
It was pretty good.
It was Strong Ass Bitch. You know? They named it after me.
And what kind of beer? That was a real name, though, right?
That was a real name. Yeah, we did. It was super fun. My third term in the Texas legislature, the Craft Brewers Association did sort of a legislative pro-am. And I got paired, I love a good beer. I got paired with White Rock Ale House, and I got to go over there. My son was in college taking a brewing class at the time, so it worked out perfect. And we went over there, and every member had to design their own beer. And I like a stronger beer, so we did a strong American ale style, and we brewed it. And it was super fun. It was been on the menu here for a long time, and it sold out. It was so popular. Everybody loved the name.
Wait, who named it?
The beer people.
Interesting. Okay.
White Rock Ale House. It was so funny because we had spent time together, and they could tell I have a strong personality, and we had a strong ale, and they thought I was, it was funny. They're all timid, like, we have a name, but we don't know if you're going to like it.
How did that go?
And then they told me, I'm like, I love it.
Love it.
Perfect. Absolutely.
And then it sold out.
It sold out. Everybody, they told me here, they had it on the menu, and it was like, it was their number one selling beer for a while.
Yeah. And what kind of beer was it again?
It was a strong American ale.
American ale.
Yeah.
And so
strong
it's
ale. It's a
strong
super,
ale.
It's a type. Yeah.
It's a different kind of ale.
And it was good.
And so it's not on the menu anymore. So what are we having today?
I'm having they're blonde, I think.
Yeah, you got the big thicket.
The big thicket, yeah. Blonde ale. That is a good one.
Yes, yep. And I'm having the Bavarian Veke. It's a German-style Hefeweizen.
Oh, nice. That's impressive for you, man. There's no fruit in that.
There is, actually. If you read the small print there, you've got the glasses. Banana
flavors
has something banana.
Banana, of course. He always likes fruity beers here.
Something in there.
So
I didn't plan beer. On that, but it happened that way.
He's the...
Okay.
He I like
does.
Sours. I like a good mead.
We could have a whole podcast on why you like fruity beer. Well,
I don't know how it
happened. He would talk you through the entire podcast, believe me.
It came about.
We could have a whole discussion about that.
It just came about. And stouts, which is weird.
You like stouts? You do like stouts. You have, and meads, too.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do a plug for the White Rock Ale House. You know, they have, it's a great local, locally owned establishment, great beer, great food, great environment.
And this location is perfect because if you've really worked it out going around the White Rock Trail around White Rock Lake,
awesome.
It parts right up. There's like an exit off the trail that will take you straight to an ale house as soon as you're done with your workout, which is great.
It's at the corner of Gaston and Grand, so it's a fantastic location.
Come on out
too.
To White Rock Ale House and then make a request for the Strong Ass Bitch beer.
Bring
demand
it back.
That it gets brought back.
Make sure it gets back on the menu.
We're going to have a revolution.
So here.
Wait, what are you drinking?
I'm having
the
map.
You never told us.
I did.
The map.
You were talking.
Okay, yeah. We drowned you out.
It's a Pilsner, so it's a good Pilsner. It's fantastic.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers. Thanks for
good
coming.
Time.
Hey, this is where you had your victory party, wasn't it?
It is.
Not?
It is.
The night of 2024, I guess it was.
It was our big primary win.
Oh, it's the primary. Okay.
So that in this district, the way gerrymandering, the way it was drawn, the primary was a thing, and we were able to win our primary outright with a runoff. We had a huge win. We were just really happy. So it was great.
The other thing that you talked about in Congress, too, is bridging the divide. And that's another reason that I love talking to you. But the idea you had to do that was a new caucus.
The Cocktail Caucus.
Tell us about this.
Well, so my friend Morgan McGarvey, he represents Louisville, so the bourbon heart of the country. He's the only Democrat in Kentucky.
Wow.
You know, so he's a red state Democrat.
What about gerrymandering?
Yeah, I'm a red state Democrat. And we talk about, he was in the Kentucky state legislature, I was in the Texas state legislature. We both talked at length about how we were able to work across the aisle and build relationships with members just by having the time to kind of let the walls drop a little bit and have a drink, have a cocktail, and visit. Learn that, you know, your kids are doing the same thing my kids are.
Yeah.
You know, we just traveled to the same spot. We just did this. You know, we just, our favorite show was this. The things that make us human,
mm-hmm.
and that you find those aspects of commonality when you can create spaces to do that. So we formed the Cocktail Caucus to be able to have a drink with somebody. Why is that their favorite thing? Kind of talk about that. And then just talk about issues of the day. So the official name is the Cocktail Caucus, a place of spirited debate on issues like, nice. Of the day.
Did you get any Republicans signed up?
Well, we're just kicking it off.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But yes, we're going to have a nice variety of folks, electeds, non-electeds, policymakers. So just come, maybe you guys will come on my cocktail
caucus. I would love to be a fly on that wall just to listen in.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. I mean, you're you know, coming to the end of your freshman term in Congress. Is there room for that still? Is
it necessary, you know?
But is it there? Is there the will there?
I think so. You know, it's so interesting. My freshman class, Republicans, there's some great folks in there. And there's some not great folks. You know, there's all the above. That's true on all the sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's some folks that I have gotten to know that I really enjoy on a personal level. And and I think that there's room. We need to, one of the downfalls of Congress that I think is starting in 2010 when Newt Gingrich came in, they pretty much banned socializing across the aisle. Even in the orientation, they had Republican things, Democratic things. We come together some, but still separate. But at least it gave us a little environment to get to know people. But there's just no environment. In the Texas legislature, you know, we'd have dinner, and I'd go to dinner with two Republicans, two Democrats, whatever, and we may fundamentally disagree on policy, but it gave us a forum to get to know each other a little bit, and then to find the spaces where we could work together. Yeah. And so, you know, I was able to pass quite a bit in the Texas Ledge because I found opportunities of conversation to get to know somebody. So, for example, I passed a really significant prior authorization bill for autoimmune disease. Well, Sam Harless, I got to know him. His wife has lupus, an autoimmune disease.
Wow.
You know, and so he joint authored that bill with me and helped me get it passed because it became personal. He saw the value of his personal experience. Now, if we didn't have a chance to get to know each other, I didn't have a chance to have those conversations, he may not have known about my bill. We may not have had that opportunity. So you have to find those spaces. And so hopefully the Cocktail Caucus will be a way in Congress to help break some of those walls down.
But will you feel the heat from like diehard Democrats, though, who say, no, we want you to do something. We want you to fight Republicans. We don't want you sitting down and having a drink with them and meeting them halfway. Fight them. We want more fight.
No, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Hmm. You know, I disagree with that premise. I think that there's a lot of topics and a lot of issues in this country that government needs to solve that should not be partisan.
Mm.
You know, whether or not we have adequate power supply to make sure that when you flip the light switch, that your power comes on should not be a Republican or a Democratic issue. Everybody I know wants their power turned on when they flip the switch. So there's things that we should be able to work on. And there's obviously things that we have strong disagreements on. In terms of women's reproductive health, you know, equality for all people, how we treat people, education, different things. And we can, you know, strongly go to war and fight the battles on those issues that we disagree. But there's so much that we should be able to agree and work together on for the American people. And I think it's fundamental for the future of our democracy that we elect people to Congress and to elected office who are willing to acknowledge it. Everything doesn't have to be a nuclear war. Everything there's plenty of things that we should be able to agree on in this country and be able to put people together who are willing to have those conversations and get to work.
So I last saw you a couple of weeks ago in Chicago, and the big news of the day obviously is redistricting. You mentioned one thing there, I hope you can mention it again here, about the Republican from California who did he offer you a bottle of something or a bottle of wine? Is that right?
Oh, we went on a congressional trip.
This is a Republican member.
Yeah, and he gave me a bottle of wine afterwards.
And
yeah.
You said?
I said, well, we can either drink this together or we'll drink it separately because we won't have a district. I mean, are we gonna solve this together? Because, you know, what are we gonna do? Are you gonna have a district to run in? Are we gonna figure this out? And, you know, it's, you know, California Republicans, it's so fascinating to me, the hypocrisy of what's happening, because, you know, they're all fine and well for Democrats to get redrawn out of Texas. That's perfectly legitimate in their mind. But God forbid California draw Republicans out. That is a bridge too far. You know, it's an outrage. And I think that is what is wrong with our politic, right, is that when the double standard of what's good for you is not good for me. And I think the American people are just sick of it.
Hmm. Your district is now heavy Republican. It will be in these new maps here. Yeah. Are you going to run again for 32?
You know, I'm fighting the maps at the moment, and we'll see. They haven't officially passed yet. There are still amendments to be made, but I will be running for Congress. I haven't made a decision at this point exactly which seat I'm going to run for, but I'm taking a hard look at 33. The vast majority of my existing 32 district is in the new 33, and those are the question is, what is your district? Is it the number or is it the people you represent?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the vast amount of the people I represent in my current congressional seat are in the new congressional district 33.
Tell us the background here, because currently 33 is represented by Mark Vesey, an incumbent, also
correct,
a friend of yours.
Yes.
So do you talk to him?
I talk to Mark all the time.
Well, I know, but I mean, hey, I'm going to run for this seat. Are you running for it too? I mean, how does that work in the background?
You know, Mark and I are going to sort it out. You know, we both are good Democrats who recognize that there's more at stake than either one of our individual congressional seats. I do not see a situation where Mark and I primary each other.
That was my next question, whether you'd run against him.
I will not run against Mark Vesey. So, we'll see. We're just going to, you know, Mark and I have figured out we are grown adults who have a lot going on, who care about Democratic politics, who care about the future of our country. Neither one of us see the value in wasting millions of dollars on a contested primary for a congressional seat. It's more, what's going on right now is more than either one of us. We are grown-ass adults and who are dear friends who respect the hell out of each other, and we will figure it out.
But voters will see you on a ballot in 26.
That is my expectation.
What other options are there if it's not the Mark Vesey district?
Well, there's always 24, Beth Van Dyne seat. You know, I've represented a significant portion of that in the state legislature. A good part of 32 got put into 24 as well.
Hers isn't as strong or as safe of a Republican district because they had to spread those voters out.
That's right. Her district is much more competitive. 24 is a much more competitive seat than the new 32. And it's more geographically compact. A good portion of it is in Dallas County. It's my strength of support is here in Dallas County. So we'll just see. You know, we're going to look at all the options. I have a brilliant team. I have brilliant campaign folks who know data like the back of their hand and know politics really well. And we'll, you know, once the maps are finalized, and we'll dig in and we'll make a thoughtful decision about what our constituents want, where our strong base of support, and what makes the most sense going forward.
And for people who haven't followed this, just to underscore what kind of changes redistricting can bring about, you won your district back in 2024 with 60% of the vote in
more
the general
than that,
election.
Don't cut it back.
Okay, what was it? Give me the specifics. Oh, you know what? I was thinking of the primary. In the primary, which basically decided the election, you won with more than 60% of the vote with 10. This was a 10-way primary, so that was an extraordinary feat. Yeah. Under the new lines, this district would now have voted for President Trump by 17.7 percentage points in the last election. So it's become significantly redder, and it now extends. I mean, it was like North Dallas before. Now it extends
almost
half the way
Louisiana.
To the Louisiana border.
Oh, way over there, yeah.
They divided 32 up into, I think, 6 or 7 new congressional seats. Wow. Part of it goes almost to Oklahoma. Part of it goes almost to Louisiana. Part of it goes out east, southeast. all over the place, and
spreading out the Democrats.
It is gerrymandering at the worst. If you look at what they did to 32, and then what they did to Tarrant County, also, I mean, it is pieced out. It is taking 100 to 150,000 urban, predominantly minority voters, and pairing them with 5 or 6 counties of white rural voters over and over and over again, and just trying to dilute the strength of that vote. And, you know, I think it's going to backfire, though. I think that they have overplayed their hand somewhat. I think they are over-relying on this rural vote at a time when rural hospitals are closing, rural healthcare is at an epidemically catastrophic state. They cannot get healthcare. Tariffs are killing our farmers. You know, there's a lot going on that's happening in Texas.
You've been hearing anecdotes about some of that.
Sure, absolutely. And so I think what's happened is what we've seen, the reason they're doing this is Trump's policies are unbelievably unpopular. I mean, he has dropped, 40 points of approval over these bills, cutting SNAP, cutting Medicaid, the role of America in the world, you know, the immigration stuff that they're doing, snatching people off the streets, a complete obliteration of due process. This isn't the America that we know. This isn't the America that these veterans fought for. When, you know, I was in a town hall yesterday, and a senior veteran who might fit a typical Republican profile says, I'm very upset because they've cut 30,000 medical professionals at the VA. They have turned their backs on veterans. You know, so how are these people going to vote? They may have historically voted Republican. Are they going to do it again? I don't know. I think that these folks are taking a lot for granted. And I think it's up to Democrats to have good candidates who can offer a compelling message and really be able to crystallize the differences of what has happened in these policies and how it directly impacts people. And we'll see what happens. But I think this election cycle is going to be very interesting. I think that these Republicans, you know that old phrase, a pig gets fat and a hog gets butchered. They got pretty greedy on some of this stuff.
Let's talk about voters in District 32 here. If Dallas County is going to be, if the Dallas County voters here are going to be that diluted, how does that impact what Dallas County gets? You know, research grants, health funding, different things like that. I mean, Dallas County's, the pie is cut up here.
That's
right. Will it impact Dallas County?
I think it absolutely will.
How so?
For one, just look at what I've been able to do. Just in my first term, I think I was able to get almost $17 million of grants. We're almost completely through the process for Dallas County. Because I'm predominantly in Dallas County, focused, have great relationships with the county and city officials to what do we need here. Because you only get so much, you know, every member. And then under this new 32, they're going to have to piece this upon 7 counties now. You know, over 200 miles of very diverse interests. You know, whereas Upshur County, their principal industry is timber. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no timber industry in Dallas County. There's no, and farming, there's none of that. They have different needs, different priorities, different focuses for their member of Congress. And I think all those folks are going to suffer.
Let me ask you this. So your district obviously is one of the ones that has been completely marked up by this. So House Democrats here in Texas at the state level, as we all know, left the state to prevent there from being a quorum so that the House was sort of paralyzed and couldn't go forward with approving these maps. So they sat out, they held out for that whole first special session, and then they returned to the state.
Mm-hmm.
Back when you were a state legislator, you left the state as well to protest and to keep there from being a quorum regarding voting rights. Did state Democrats do enough? I mean, your district is under threat. They're back. These maps, you know, everybody pretty much knows these are going to get through. Did they do enough? Should they have held out longer? Should they have done something different?
Well, you know, for me, it was always, what is the end game? What are the objectives? And for me, and I said this many times, you know, part of their objective was to ignite a national discussion, ignite Democratic states to respond, make sure that this didn't go unchecked. And they accomplished that, you know. And so the fact that California, and you know, they got Gavin Newsom fired up, and they met with the California state legislators, they got them on board to where they are going to respond, is a huge thing. Secondly, igniting the Democratic base. You know, people are fired up. They've raised a lot of money. People are engaged. They're outraged at what's happening. People just don't like it. Democrats don't like it. And I think they've really achieved that. But the reality of it is we don't have the numbers to defeat a map. And it's not realistic to expect these folks to stay away from their job without an income, away from their kids. A lot of them have young children, their families, when they've already been away from the special session. Until when? November of 26? I mean, how? At what point? So I think that the reality of it is they did a lot that I was hoping that they would achieve. Would we like to see the map stop? Sure, but you know, I think we're seeing a more national conversation about the impacts of redistricting, and if this helps move the country towards more of a national independent redistricting situation, I think that's a good thing. But they never had the numbers to actually stop
the map. Did California do enough here, though? I mean, the governor there wants to create 5 seats that are more safely Democratic. There was a lot of conjecture that they could have probably done that with even more seats than 5 seats. You know, we hear these other red states now considering this. Should California have gone further, do you think?
I think the whole thing was to neutralize the impact of Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't favor partisan gerrymandering. You know, none of us do. We want voters to have communities of interest, be able to elect their representatives to represent those communities of interest. And so this was a war tactic. You know, this was a Democrats are playing dirty pool, and we're not going to let them get away with it. So we're going to neutralize the impact of what they're doing. And I think that was the right thing to do.
When Governor Abbott signs these maps into law here, do Democrats have any real legal steps they can take?
Well, in my opinion, it's a clear violation of the Voting Rights Act. I mean,
but that takes years to go through in court, doesn't it?
Well, maybe. You know, they've had a court case that's been pending for years that has proceeded through down in El Paso. The judge has the ability to issue an injunction and prohibit these maps from going into effect. That's certainly within their legal authority to do that. We'll see if they do or not, you know, and I think that was kind of another one of the processes was to get for the quorum break was to give enough time for lawyers to get the appropriate motions filed in court and let the judicial process cook a little bit. And that was another goal that they achieved. Yeah.
Speaking of litigation, you're on the litigation task force in the House among House Democrats. How has that been going and what exactly does that entail? Because, you know, as we kind of started off talking about, you keep hearing about, you know, from the Democratic base clamoring for they want Democrats to take it to the Trump administration. They want you to stop everything that they're doing, but Democrats just don't have the power in D.C. right now either.
Well, I think I'd say the litigation arena is one way where the Democrats are winning. Democratic attorneys general have done amazing things. And so basically what the litigation task force of the House is, it's headed by Jamie Raskin, but they pulled together some of the, for lack of a better term, best, brightest lawyers. Mm-hmm. And I was honored to be part of that. I mean, I'm a longtime lawyer here in Dallas. I had practiced for 33 years here. As a group to kind of coordinate with all of the different groups that have standing to bring suits and to coordinate an amicus brief policy that the House signs off on in order to have a more of a coherent litigation strategy to push back against the Trump administration. I believe we have won in court like 89% of the time. We've had every jurisdiction, every district court, judges from every district circuit, every appointee from every president that, you know, have ruled with the Democrats against the Trump administration. Republicans, Bush appointees, Reagan appointees, Trump appointees, you know, all of the above, and every circuit have really pushed back to say what you're doing is unconstitutional and out of the bounds. And so I think the litigation strategy has been one of the most effective and one of the least discussed. And in our amicus briefs that the House members have directly filed, we have won in every single one. The litigation strategy has been one of the most effective things that we've done, I think.
We've talked to some of your colleagues on the right, Kevin Kiley, Republican from California, represents Lake Tahoe, Mike Lawler from New York, about gerrymandering too. We kind of started the whole episode with that, about how they don't like it either, especially when they're in the crosshairs there. But should Congress set national guardrails, do you think, to try to stop mid-decade redistricting for federal seats?
Yes.
And is there, I mean, what would it take to actually get that to happen? Because whoever's in charge wants as many seats as they can get so they can remain in charge.
Well, I think Mike Johnson wants that. It's going to depend on the, you know, for lack of a better phrase, how big of balls does Mike Lawler and Kevin Kiley have? You know, they have a 3-vote narrow margin in the House. If they wanted to, these Republicans who are going to get drawn out of their seats in response could say, we're not voting on anything. All of your legislation is stopped, sir, until you call this off. They have great power if they're choosing to use it. But, you know, I have yet to see a Republican with any stones that are willing to use their power to actually affect something good. And so we'll see. They all cave in the end.
And
I mean, they all cave in the end.
Do you have a relationship enough with them to say these things, like, just straight to them?
Yes, I do that. That's how I am.
You know that she has a beer here, too. You know what it's called?
It's called a strong-ass bitch.
Have you heard of this beer, Wheeler?
I do. It's the thing. When you have relationships, you can say, are you actually going to, you know, man up and actually vote today or not? Are you going to cave again?
And what do they say to you?
What do they say?
They just, you know, I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, and you suck. You know, I mean, come on. I think that's the thing that's so troubling to me is, you know, what's worse? These far-right Republicans that actually believe all this crazy crap, or the ones that know it's wrong but don't have the courage to stand up to it? I personally think it's the latter.
So you all have been out for an extended period this time. You go back, what, September 2nd?
September 2nd, yeah.
You had to go early, there's been a lot of conjecture that was because nobody wanted to, you know, bring up the Epstein vote on getting those files released. How much are we going to be hearing about the Epstein files come next month?
I think you're going to hear a lot about the Epstein files. I know the Republicans panicked because they actually were going to have to vote on the release of the Epstein files. You know, these fools have only campaigned on this for, what, 6-8 years now? I mean, however long it's been, like forever, it's been their number one campaign thing. Transparency, release the files. It's a gross conspiracy. It's the cornerstone of the MAGA conspiracy movement is the Epstein files. And now these Republicans are like, now that their great leader is maybe mentioned in the Epstein files, they don't want to release them. They're in a quandary of quandaries. So they panicked, they cut Congress loose early, they sent everybody home, but you know what? It has not stopped. The drumbeat of the Epstein files, you know, Massey's filed a bill to release the Epstein files. I think other conservative Republicans who have campaigned on this over and over and over, I think even Marjorie Taylor Greene said release the Epstein files.
Did, yeah.
And so there's enough of them in concert. All you need is three of them and all of us to release the Epstein files. And the Oversight Committee voted and they're doing depositions. They deposed Bill Barr yesterday. They're getting documents. The subpoenas are starting to turn documents over. The Epstein files are going to be alive and well come September, and it's going to be fun to see what happens. But I'm for release of the files. Bring it on. Bring the transparency. You know, if you sexually abuse young girls and women, I don't care who you are, I don't care what party you're from, I don't care what power you have, you need to be prosecuted and held accountable. It's outrageous.
But isn't it up to a judge to decide whether these files get released?
Well, it's the administration. They have them. They can release them at any time.
So the administration can release them without permission?
Well, you know, Pam Bondi said she had them all on her desk.
She said she had them.
You know, they're just waiting. And then she said she doesn't, you know.
Right.
Once they actually looked at them and saw, uh-oh, there may be some people in here that we don't want to have their names released. Uh-oh.
She did say she had them.
You know, all you hear is that great reverse, you know, the beep, beep, beep. It's a giant...
But that's what so many people are upset about, though, is
that's
that
right.
they say there's power.
The right. So many people on the right.
On the right, yeah, who say there's power. There's got to be powerful names in there, and that's why we're not seeing this.
That's right. Well, I think they may be right. Otherwise, just release the damn files. Redact the names of the victims and release the files.
You're one of the Texas Democrats who are one of the Democrats nationwide who's really vocal about tougher border enforcement. And you mentioned this earlier in this podcast, too, but what's your reaction to the ICE detentions?
Oh, it's outrageous.
Raids that are happening across the country?
It's just immoral. It's wrong. It violates everything of who we are as a country. I mean, American democracy is founded on the sanctity of the rule of law. And it's founded on the fact that we have no kings. I mean, that's the genesis of how our country was originated. The fact that the people had fair and equal access to due process in this country. You're innocent until proven guilty. That is a core tenet of who we are and what separates us from extreme dictatorships like Russia and North Korea and the Chinese and people who just trample the citizens' rights. And so to have a situation where we have these Rambo wannabes masked up, not properly identified, and just security or whatever, or just tough looking clothes that they can jump out of a moving car, tackle somebody who's just merely walking down the street.
Food delivery drivers.
Right, food delivery drivers, yeah. And just haul their ass off without a hearing, without anything, without any due cause. It's wrong. I've been speaking out against it forcefully. That is not who we are as a country.
But Republicans say, look, you know, what President Trump has done on the border, and you know, married with this, it's cut illegal immigration down to zero.
Sure. I mean, yeah, people are scared, and it's certainly that the deterrence has certainly worked in that regard. But that is just because the result may have been achieved, the means to an end still have to be valued. We are a country who values means to an end, and we value that. And what's happening is just so wrong. And I don't know how many veterans have come up to me. I did not fight for this. This is not what I fought for. This isn't the values of democracy that I put my life on the line, that I lost my leg for, that I got, you know, whatever. And you're also saying, I saw a report yesterday that all these National Guard troops that have been deployed to police against their citizens of this country. You know that the re-up rate for the National Guard used to be like at 90%. It's at like 20%. Mm-hmm. We're having this incredible, leaving rate of people who's like, I am not here for this. Mm-hmm. I'm here to serve my country, but I am not here to serve it this way. This is not the America, the policies. And so I think what's happening is so wrong. You know, if there's a person here who's committed criminal violence, who deserves to be deported, deport their ass, go. But have the process, have a hearing, have a judge, have the thing, make the determination, and deport them to their country of origin. But you can't just haul people down because of the color of their skin when they're walking down the street. That's just outrageous.
A lot of American citizens got caught up in that too.
That's right. And wrongfully held for three, 4 days without access, without a complete obliteration of their constitutional rights. No phone calls, no access to lawyers, no nothing. No ability to notify their families or get them out. And then they're just hiring. They've lowered their standards. They're just hiring any 18-year-old. You know, we have all made this determination that 18-year-olds don't have the mental capacity to buy a pack of cigarettes. Mm. But now they can go and be an ICE agent terrorizing Americans across this country. It's insane.
And Representative Johnson, this effort, though, is a baby. It's just beginning.
I know.
I mean, the money was just put through to really ramp this up.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's up to and you're seeing the American people, the drumbeat starting to beat against it. You're seeing protests, you're seeing people video and film and try to protect their neighbors and step in when these wrongful assaults are happening. And I think you're going to see more and more and more of that. And again, this is what I mean. I think that Republicans have overplayed their hand. And this people are not, they do not approve of what's happening.
That dovetails into my next question. Out of all the things that have happened in these last 6 months, and there's been a lot that's happened in these past 6 months, what would you say your office has heard from the people on the most?
That's the shortest question he's ever asked.
I think it may be.
It's the shortest.
Can we get the time on that?
All the Doge cuts. Cuts to Medicaid, cuts to SNAP, worried about Social Security, invasion of the personal security, invasion of the personal data. And then second would be this.
The immigration crackdown.
And it's, yeah, and it's not a situation of, oh, thank God they're sending all these illegals. It's not that at all. It's what's happened to due process. What has happened to this country, to the rule of law? I mean, I don't care if you've grown up Republican or Democrat your whole life. One thing that has been instilled in you is the fact that this country is a country based on laws that are and of governance that regulate our society, and that we have a standard of how those laws are to be enforced and to how those laws are to be enacted that means something. And everyone sees that this has been a complete obliteration of all of that, that we've grown up our entire lives believing and fighting for and defending around the world. And it's a moral outrage that is transcending age, it's transcending political party, it's transcending race. It's not right.
You're running for office again next year, and you were talking about having, you know, Democrats needing to field a good crop of candidates. If you had to distill it and get it down to the issue that this election is going to be decided on, what is it?
Well, I think in terms of candidacy, and you know, one of the most positive comments I've had about myself is authenticity. That, you know, I'm just me. I don't sugarcoat stuff. I tell it like it is. I call balls and strikes. You know, I am just myself. And people relate to that. And they don't have to agree with all of my positions, but they know I'm honest. They know I'm a trusted, I do what I say I'm going to do. And that there's no surprises. You know, they know what they're getting. And I think that that's really important. I think too often, too many politicians have come into this political speak that makes no sense, that doesn't communicate anything about anything. And people just want real people where they know what they're getting and that there's an authentic relationship. And I think we just have to do that and to build people who can effectively communicate that.
Here's my last question. If President Trump helps broker an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, does he deserve a Nobel Peace Prize?
Well, if he can bring a legitimate end to the Russia-Ukraine war, where Ukraine has had a piece of the table, and where they don't, you know, lose their territory, and the Ukrainian people have made the decisions that they want, absolutely, you know, that war needs to come to an end.
I'll go the other direction in my last one here. If Democrats retake the House in 2026. Do you foresee another Trump impeachment?
I think it depends on the Senate. You know, we had an impeachment vote earlier. You know, for me, he's been impeached twice. And unless you have the votes to actually convict and effectuate the impeachment, it takes away from the issues that are really happening on the ground. And it creates this cover of kind of a shitstorm, for lack of a better word, to underneath that do a lot of really bad things. And I want to keep our focus on the oversight of all those really bad things that are happening to people. If we take the Senate and if we take the House and we have the ability to actually convict an impeachment, I'm the first vote yes, because I think he has violated his duties to the Constitution. I think he has been a horrible president, has violated his duties to the American people. But having said that, we have to stay focused on the policies that are going to impact people. The best thing we could do is give Donald Trump an impeachment proceeding that he gets to pump around and deflect from stealing people off the street, from starving children, from doing all these, from putting military law into our cities. And so we want to stay focused on the things that are actually happening, the things that we can stop, the things that the policies that are in place. And I'm not for just a showboat show that's not going to materially change the outcome.
We should probably let you be going now. You have your whole entourage now.
I do.
That's different.
I do. I have a security detail.
For the first time?
Yes. Since they never had security budgets for members of Congress.
Which is astounding.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, we have a significant budget to pay great staff and to do great things in our district. But we never had an allocation for security. And then after the shootings of those Minnesota lawmakers, enough members on both sides of the aisle raised enough hell that we actually got a nice security allowance. And now I have my favorite security guard over there who keeps me safe.
Does feel good, doesn't it?
It's awesome,
yeah.
You know, because he's a badass. And I wouldn't put anything past him. It does. It's because, you know, we interface with the public a lot. And what you don't ever want is a situation where your elected members of Congress are too afraid to be with their constituents for their own personal safety. Mm-hmm. And no one should have to get shot or killed in this job. You know, you should be able to interact and be with the people you represent, those that agree with you and those that don't, and not be afraid for your personal safety in the process. So to have my guy over there and my team makes me feel safe, and I love having them. But you know, I go out, and I was with 1,000 people the other day. You know, we're out in mass, and we need to be available. But you know what, my family wants me to come home at night too.
Good point. I'm glad we finally got this episode done, because it was a long time in the planning with your team, and we had a lot of issues between the cocktail caucus. Keep us posted on that.
Yeah.
And then the beer here at White Rock Ale House. So shout out to White Rock Ale House for having us. And
keep
an eye on the menu here to see if Strong Ass Bitch shows back up.
I know. We put in our demand request.
Start clamoring.
On the beer
Thank
menu.
Thank you, guys. It's nice to actually have
a
conversation when it's more than a 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's not a soundbite.
You can actually get down into it.
Yeah, it's great.
We definitely appreciate it. And thanks for watching. And thanks for listening as well. We'll see you next week.